8. Bully Boy. Galva told me she'd made plans for us and that I should meet her by Harrow's tower the next morning at sunrise. Unfortunately, not an hour after I left the Stag and Quiet Drum, I got arrested. It wasn't my fault. First thing I did, having left my bow and pack stashed in the inn's attic so I could move light on my feet, was make my way to the town square where the town mouth had cried the coming of giants to Ostrom. Now mouths of a different sort were crying. A group of mummers had come in a wagon all hung with bells and tattered banners and bits of stained or stolen silk. The side of the wagon had folded down and rested on legs to make a small stage a yard off the ground. Letters on the wagon spelled Dams of Lamnor, and indeed there didn't seem to be a man in the company. Several dozen lookiesees had gathered near, but only about a third of them sat on the benches the players offered. Most lingered at the margins, keeping their options open should they grow bored and wish to leave. These would make the easiest prey. The troupe was performing a crowning play. These were little farces, half an hour long, meant not only to make laughter but to teach the names of foreign kings and queens. Foreigners were fair game in these shows, but I doubted I'd see the likeness of good King Conmar of Holt on the boards. Indeed, the subject of today's mummery was the mad princess, the Aspanthian Infanta Mireia, played by a comely lass in a red dress. She sported with the pet monkey Mireia had as a girl, the very one, she later claimed, spoke to her and told her the future. The role of the monkey fell to a lady dwarf, very talented at making monkey noises and who capered with great energy. Mireia. Pray tell me, monkey, what you see. Monkey. Your uncle comes to shake your tree and paint his name with villainy. Mireia. Pray tell me, monkey, what you think. Monkey. Your uncle comes to creep and slink and kill your da with poison drink. Now, a player in an outsized King Caliph mask, complete with foot-long mustachios, sauntered on stage, sloshing a giant goblet of wine. I looked around to see if the Spanth were watching this mockery of her home court, but he did not see her. Caliph splashed wine on the King and Queen players, who'd been dancing unaware just off the stage. They both sputtered and fell, and Caliph took a large painted crown and set it on his own head. Mireia, pray tell me, uncle, what you chant. Caliph, I stopped them in their foolish dance, and now I am the king of Spanths. Mireia cried out while her monkey capered. Mireia, pray tell me, uncle, what you'll do. Caliph, if I would speak and tell it true, my niece, I have to murder you. Monkey, help, help. The villain means to slay her. Will no one save the fair Mireia? Some had a chuckle at that. The largish woman, whose purse I caught with my nip-knife, certainly seemed to enjoy it. When Caliph came at Princess Mireia, she held the monkey up before her and claimed the monkey had warned her of Caliph's treachery. At that, the mummer playing the dead Aspanthian king, Mireia's father, stood up long enough to speak. He cautioned his brother, Caliph, that the gods always revenge themselves on those who harm the mad, and that nobody in their right mind talked to monkeys. When Mireia heard this, she began to caper about madly with the monkey, even down to throw and pretend faces at the crowd. Most of them howled, including the young lady I bumped into in my own feigned laughing fit and relieved of a silver earring. Looking back, I'm glad the Spanth wasn't there to see the Infanta of her homeland reduced to throwing poo. She'd have likely dry-beat the players with a flat of her spadine and caused a brawl. I hadn't heard of the Dams of Lamnor before, but they weren't half bad. I didn't see the end of the crowning play, though. It's best to be away once you've got what you think you can, so I moved on to other quarters. I knew the rest of the play anyway. Mireia, her life spared by her feigned madness, was married off to a king sufficiently distant from her home and from the treacherous uncle who meant her ill. Married off to a Galardian king who got eaten by goblins at the king's doom. At the close of the farce, all the players would take up little props shaped like goblin heads and bite the gallard king off stage. It was only in the last year or so that players had the nerve to represent goblins in mummery, and I choose to look at that as a sign of returning strength. You can't make fun of something everyone's still terrified of. Man Reach was starting to heal. These mummers supposedly did pretty well for themselves, lampooning the woes of our neighbours to the south and east. I later heard the dwarf would swallow any silver or gold coin given to her, which made me wonder if the others let her go alone to the privy. I wandered next through Sparktown, the old blacksmith's streets just off the river docks, until I reached the market. Near the eel stalls, I came to notice a gang of cats slinking about like cats do near fish stalls, but one stood out. He was a bone-skinny grey-brown tabby, slower than the rest, and he never jumped, but scraped the walls near the bridge with his whiskers, staying out of open spaces. When the old lady'd whack off a fresh eel head, she'd toss it in the gutter, and the other toms would slink over and fight, but not this one. He'd sort of nod in the air, finding the scent, and then amble over in his own good time, content to lick the spot where the head landed after his fellows dragged it off. He was blind. That's when the cat catchers came. About a dozen years ago, during a round of the plagues the goblins sent us, some old geezer at a Galardian university worked out that one sickness, the whip cough, was being carried by cats. So off everyone went, drowning, clubbing, and otherwise dispatching anything with pointy ears and a saucy look on his face. Eventually the plague died out, like all the goblin plagues eventually did, and everyone stopped cat-catching, except the Baron of Cadoth, whose son had died after a cat bite went sour. Rumour was the boy'd been doing something mean and weird to it. Not what you're thinking. Weirder than that. And that nobody deserved an unlucky death more than he. Still, the rich hold grudges the poor can't afford, and the Baron left the edict in place. Fortunately for cats, inflation made the bounty so small nobody much bothered any more, and the Baron didn't care to adjust it, so cats mostly came back. 2 copper shaves a hide doesn't buy much, but it buys a loaf of bread, it buys a fishhook, it buys 3 apples. So, shoot 2 cats, that's supper. Cat-catching won't win you any friends, but it might keep you from starving. So here came 2 of the grubbiest-looking teenaged pricks you'd ever see, with sacks on their backs, rag-wrapped sandals, and 2 cheap-but-nasty-looking crossbows. I'd barely worked out who or what they were before they'd both fired bolts. 1 bolt chinked on stone and made a spark, but the other took a ginger long hair through the ribs. All the cats ran, but the blind one, who tried to flee but hit a wall, then made false starts in 2 directions before he just crouched against the wall and shivered. 1 of the cat shooting turdlets scooped up and sacked the ginger, while the other hucked and spat, reloading his bow with a rusty bolt he pulled out of his pocket. The blind cat just sat there, staring in this direction and that with wide, useless yellow-green eyes. Most people just looked away, though a couple of shite kids hooted at the fun. The turdlet with a bow took aim. "Wait," I said, and God's bless me, I got in between him and the cat. "What, you nap?" he said, the flower of Holtish charm. "I'll give you 2 shaves if you don't shoot Bully Boy." "Sure," he said, "sure," lowering his bow. I had the unworthy suspicion he intended to shoot it after he got his money, but I couldn't stand on morals. I had no intention of giving him 2 shaves, not the sort he meant, anyway. When I got close to him, I drew a small but very sharp nip knife from my belt and, quick as a snake, ran its edge up 1 of his hairy cheeks and down the other, meanwhile slapping his bow down to clatter on the ground. I trip-kicked the other one. The low school makes expert trippers, blinders, and knockers down of all its fledglings. And he fell with a faw. I sprinted at the cat. I grabbed it up by its nape and ran hard as it paddled its back legs in the air. "My cat!" the ginger shooter yelled at my back. "That galty prigger stole my cat and abused me." I really don't know where the chain's dam came from, but I was still a bit drunk from the drum, and there she was, big, quick and hard, and me with my hand too full a cat to do anything about her. I saw myself in her steel breastplate, green-eyed and o-mouthed, a squirming blind alley cat in me left hand, and she snapped a manacle on my right wrist before I was fully aware what she was about. She couldn't see my tattoo by daylight, but we weren't in daylight long. "Guild, eh?" the clerk of justice said in the wobbly candlelight of the jail. Crutches leaned against the wall behind him. "Yes, sir." "The sirs won't help you any more than your guild will, Blacktongue. You know what they say about cop thieves, aye?" "I'm not a thief." "Yes, and I'll just put the tip in. We know how these things go. What do your masters in the guild say about cop thieves, boy? Something about branches?"
"Pruned branches feed the tree."
"Hmm. So what am I charged with? I didn't steal anything." "Man says it's his cat."
"I touched it first. Doesn't that make it my cat?"
"That's as the law says."
"So can I go?"
"It's like you could if you hadn't pulled a knife on the squire, and I say squire with a deep sense of irony."
"You're too smart for this work."
"I could say as much to you, cat grabber, purse nipper, prank. Do you deny tripping the one and abusing the other with a knife?"
"Not a big knife.
Why do it?"
"Cat's blind. It wasn't sporting."
"Sporting? There's a word you normally only hear out of rich mouths, you rich cat pincher."
"Do I look it?"
"You look worn and dirty, I grant, but hardly run before the boar. Your split-toed thieving boots are decently made, and that is not a poor man's blade on your belt."
"Then I am rich. I have 100 gold lions and 1,000 silver owlets waiting on my ship in the hot sea. I'm going to go find a mermaid with a taste for old plums and a fortune in black pearls up her squinny and send her back to you."
"Mermaids don't have squinnies. It's what makes them a parable for life. Warm and welcoming for the first half, then it gets cold and hard and smells bad. But thank you for not being boring. You know how sick I get of hearing, 'Spare me, justice, I am innocent, I swear by the gods.' I had decided to hang the next squire told me he was innocent, especially if he was."
"Can I keep the cat?"
"Cook him and eat him for all I care. Chains them!"
The woman who arrested me stepped forward, the blind cat docile in her fist, a half-dozen candles dancing in the darkness reflected by her armour.
"Give him back his love, child. Then welcome them both to Cell 3 West.
They didn't even bother taking my knives off me.